Today on Maine Calling, the best and overlooked books, our 2025 edition. Does holiday shopping for you include a visit to your local bookstore? Let me guess, you're the one who walks out with books for yourself as well as gifts for other people. That's okay, no one's judging. Today we're going to help you make that shopping list. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is our annual book show in which experts and enthusiasts chime in and share their current favorites. Whether it's a bestseller everyone's talking about or a book you feel has been overlooked, we want to hear from you. Is there a book that made you laugh, cry, or think about things from a new perspective? Share! Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Get ready to add to your to-read list. Yes, it is our annual Best and Overlooked Books of the Year show. Today, you will hear recommendations for great books of all different genres, including some by Maine authors. Our guest today, Laura Hale, owner of Neighborhood Books in Presque Isle, Holly Williams, head of circulation at the Bangor Public Library, and best-selling author Kenneth C. Davis, known for his Don't Know Much About History series. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have a favorite book to recommend? Something you've read in the past year? Are you a local author? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Laura, I'll start with you. At your bookstore in Presque Isle, what has been popular this year? Is there a certain book or a certain genre that you find people asking for more this year than in years past?
Absolutely. We started a romanticy section this year, which is a romance plus fantasy. I feel like maybe the Fourth Wing series by Rebecca Yarros kind of kicked this off. So that series has three books in it: Fourth Wing, Iron Flame, and then Onyx Storm came out at the beginning of this year. And we just had to create a whole new romanticy section to fill that need. And it's kind of too full right now. We see so many romanticy books are really popular right now. So that's definitely, I think, maybe the most popular genre in our store right now.
Wow, you learn something new every day at romanticy. And you know what, Holly? I see you nodding and smiling and nodding and smiling. It's not just Presque Isle where romanticy is popular.
No, that was the first thing I wrote down when we talk about trends. Romanticy is the thing. The Court of Thorns and Roses series also, I think Sarah Moss, that's another one that's very popular. And honestly, anything on Book Talk is that's pretty popular. So
I'm going to stop you right now, Holly, some of our listeners might not know what Book Talk is. I happen to know what it is because I have a 24-year-old daughter, but why don't you explain what Book Talk is?
Okay, so I'm going to first have a confession. Like, I don't know a lot about Book Talk. That's not something that I access very much, but usually they often can be on Instagram or on TikTok. So they're a Book Talk, so it's BOOKTOK, and a lot of people will talk about certain titles, things that they've really enjoyed, and honestly, romanticy is like the big thing that's on Book Talk, but even like Frederick Bachman's A Man Called Ove has been on there too, so it's just popular like little videos that people will make, and it really can boost a book's sales and readership.
And the people making these book talks are not experts. They're all sorts of people, but mainly young women who just are talking about a book they loved and why they loved it, right?
Yeah, pretty great, actually.
Yeah, well, Kenneth C. Davis, I'm guessing that romanticism has not been your, what you've been reading a lot of this year. I know that you are an expert on history, and I'm just wondering though, history is such a broad category. Are you reading about the history of science? Are you reading about military campaigns? Are you reading about culture? What's your genre of the moment?
My genre of the moment, and good morning, Jen, and it's always a pleasure to be on Maine Calling. My genre of the moment is, I would say, all things Italian, personally speaking. My wife and I have been studying Italian, and we visit Italy often. In fact, we're getting ready to visit Florence in a few weeks. We're
Ah,
looking forward
lucky.
to that, taking some small people from Maine with us. And that's we're thrilled about that. So I've been reading a lot about Renaissance Italy as well as more recent events in Italy, and reading Italian fiction. And we'll get to some of my picks in just a moment. What most people may know, because I've talked about it here a couple of times in the past few years, is that my focus since the pandemic is on reading generally, but also on reading short books, both short fiction, which I presented in the book Great Short Books, A Year of Reading Briefly, and in the more recent book, The World in Books, A Year of Reading Wisely, where I focus on books that you can read 200 pages or less. You can read them in a week's time. So it's an offering, a curated guide to a year of reading. And that is really meant to get us back into the habit of reading. Reading is an exercise. We have to do it the way we're supposed to go to the gym or take walks or ride the bike or do jogs. It's an exercise, it's a skill, it needs to be cultivated. And of course, in this era of the phone everywhere, and I'm sure the bookseller and the librarian can vouch for this, I mean, people are not reading. I was at the beach this summer and I re remarked to my wife how few people had a book on the beach anymore, which used to be so commonplace. And the few people I saw reading on the beach, I even commented to them. I said, "It's very rare to see a book on the beach." And they said, "I always bring a book to the beach." So I'm all in favor of reading whatever it is that you read, but doing it because we need to exercise that piece of our brain, that muscle to help us think, not to escape what's re what whatever reality we might want to escape, but perhaps as an antidote to the despair and the doom scrolling that we all are doing.
And Holly, you have a point to make.
I just wanted to say that sometimes when you're on that beach, they could be on their phone, but they could actually be reading. They could be
This
reading
is true.
ebook on their phone.
This
That's
is
what I
true.
do.
People do read or even listen on their phones, and I take that into account. But as one of the points I make in The World in Books is that reading on paper, and this has been studied, is very different from reading online or reading or listening to a book. That when we read on paper, we actually do something with our brains. And very often it's a matter of going back and rereading something from the page before. So it's a very different experience. So while I'm in favor of all kinds of reading, I do think that reading books on paper is a different experience. And it's one that is all too much disappearing. Famous, notorious, perhaps, article in The Atlantic about 2 years ago about how incoming students at elite colleges can't read a book. They just are not capable of it. And that's a very, really frightening idea to me.
Well, we are going to get your recommendations in just a minute, but I understand that one of our callers is a teacher on a break, so I want to be sure and go to her. Kayla calling from Auburn. Hi, Kayla, go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi, Kayla, go ahead.
Hi. I'm Kayla James. I just published a new book. It's called The Chronicles of a Guinea Pig. And I want to be able to share that out with everybody.
And you are a teacher, right?
I am a teacher.
How did you get the idea for the book, and how does that relate to your teaching?
Yeah, of course. My husband, he had a pet guinea pig when he was younger, and I decided it might be funny to write the tale of the guinea pig's point of view. This was during the pandemic, and we had a lot of time on our hands, so I thought it would be funny to write a book. And I had years of my brother and my mom telling me, "Hey, you should write a book," and I always kind of like, "Yeah, sure, maybe I will." And then, we had all that time, and so I did, and this has been a whirlwind experience, because then I've been sharing it with my students and other students, and making lessons about the book, and they are just thrilled that they have a main author that they know that is, teaching them in their classroom.
Well, you have built in a focus group then, right?
Yes.
Well, and I have to ask you what grade you teach.
Fifth grade.
Well, congratulations and thanks so much for calling in. Chronicles of a Guinea Pig, and you said your last name is James, Kayla James?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Thanks so much for calling in. Well, that's our first recommendation of the hour. Laura Hale, you're next. What is your recommendation of the hour?
Okay, one of my favorite books from 2025, and I feel like it's been a little bit overlooked. It's called The Poppy Fields by Nikki Erlich. And she also wrote The Measure, which I haven't read yet, but I need to get to it. So The Poppy Fields is an experimental and controversial treatment center in California. And it's a place where you can go to grieve. And while you're there, you'll be sleeping the whole time. So you're basically sleeping, you're grieving while you're sleeping, and there are side effects to this treatment. So people are deciding if it's good for you or not good for you. And it focuses around four people who are traveling to the poppy fields together, and they're driving across country to get there. And while they're traveling, they're learning why each of them needs. Feels that they need to go to the poppy fields to grieve. And it's just a really a story of grieving and healing and unlikely friendships, which seem to be one of my favorite genres. So yeah, I loved
Boy,
it.
and it sounds like it's a movie script as well. So, yeah, Holly, I'll go to you next.
So Laura took my title.
Really? So both of you are going to recommend the same book. That's something, The Poppy Fields. Go ahead.
Yes, excellent. But I have so many others. So trying to narrow it down is very difficult. So I'm going to try to do two briefly. So one is The Correspondent by Virginia Evans, a short book. So when Kenneth mentioned that it is a short book, it's in a epistolary format. So it's all pulled in letters. And it's about a woman who she doesn't email. She only writes to everyone. And she is retired, and she writes to famous people like Joan Didion, and Joan Didion actually writes back to her. But you see how she has lived her life and how she's held on to a lot of grievances, and forgiveness ends up going throughout the book, especially near the end. So that's one of them. But My Friends by Frederick Bachman has to be probably one of my favorites of 2025, as well as other people here at the library. I had one a staff person who she said, "This delicious novel was like a vacation for my brain." It's wonderful, and it's about a group of teenagers who they like to get together because they like to escape their homes. Their homes are a bit rough, and so they have their friendships is what keeps them alive, basically. And it's about one of the kids is an artist, and it's about how art can transform your life as well as other people. And it follows the artist a little bit through that, his teen years, and then as an adult, and how other characters come, they're intertwined, that I don't want to ruin it, so I don't want to say anymore. But it's so absolutely beautiful.
Wonderful. Kenneth Davis, your turn.
Okay, I'm going to start off on this Italian theme that I mentioned with two pieces of short fiction, both by Italian writers. The first is The Old Man by the Sea by Domenico Starnone. Domenico Starnone is probably the most prominent living Italian novelist alongside Elena Ferrante. And there's a tale in that because it's suspected that Domenico Starnone might have a relationship with the woman who is Elena Ferrante, but that's for another story. It's a wonderful reflection of a, it's in translation, of course, reflections of an older man in his 80s who goes to the sea and what he witnesses around him. It's a reflection on life, death, mortality, desire, certainly very themes that are all very familiar. And of course, the Old Man by the Sea title is a complete reference to Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea, which is referenced in the book. It is also a book that reminded me of several other titles that are in my book, great short books, Agostino by Alberto Moravia, Elena Ferrante's The Lost Daughter, The Old Man and the Sea, and Death in Venice, about a man by the sea, thinking about desire and death. So, big themes in a little book. The second one is very different, and by a very young Italian writer named Vincenzo Latronico, and the title is Perfection. It's very, very interesting, a very contemporary novel, not set in Italy. It's set mostly in Berlin, involving a couple who are very much involved in the tech world and working at home and on their computers. And in Berlin, where there's this whole nation, community of expats who are nomadic workers. So it's very contemporary. The interesting thing about it, and this might be, not be for everyone, is there's not a word of dialogue in it. It's all narrative. But it's a fascinating book. It's very much of the time, and I would recommend it. Again, short. This one's less than 100 pages. And both of them are under 200 pages. So those are my Italian novelists, and certainly overlooked when we just don't read enough fiction by foreign writers in America. So I always try and encourage that.
Joining us now, Christopher Packard, who is an author and teacher. He founded the Bangor Authors Fair. Thanks so much for calling in, Christopher.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you've got a big event you're involved in coming up next weekend. When you say next weekend, you mean this coming weekend, right? What's going on?
Well, I mean December 13th.
Okay.
So not this Saturday, but the Saturday after that from 10 to 3, the Bangor Public Library is letting us, and us being 100 authors, take over the Bangor Public Library, beautiful place. And we're having a book fair and literary festival. There will be 7 publishers, free admission, free programming throughout the day. It's going to be really exciting.
Oh, how
it's,
fun.
The
so
largest, yeah.
You said 100 authors. Are these all Maine authors or predominantly Maine authors?
They are all Maine authors from around the state, mostly in the northern half of the state, but we do have some people make their way up from the Portland area.
And what kind of authors? Are these fiction authors or nonfiction, children's books, poetry? What are you representing?
Well, you named it. All of it. All of the above. There's literally something for everybody, like cookbooks and romance books and fiction, nonfiction, children's authors. And they'll be doing readings and talks throughout the day, as well as having their books available for sale.
Wonderful. Does it cost anything? Do you need to get a ticket ahead of time? This sounds like something that might be pretty popular.
Yeah, it's super popular. It's the busiest day at the library all year, and it's totally free for the public to attend. And it's a great way to meet authors and find holiday gifts and discover that new book. Most of the authors have a book out, and the most recent either this year or last year. And yeah, it's exciting.
It does sound exciting. Well, thanks so much for calling. And you said no ticket. You can just show up, right, between 10 and 3?
No ticket. It's completely free. And every kid that comes in between ages of 0 and 12, while supplies last year go reads, is going to be giving them a free book just for coming.
Wonderful. So thank you so much for calling in. That was Christopher Packard with the Bangor Authors Fair. Guess what? It's already that time. We're going to take a quick break. We are talking about favorite books on today's show. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. It is our annual Best and Overlooked Books of the Year show. Joining me, author and historian Ken Davis. You know him from his Don't Know Much About History series of books, but he has written many other books as well, and he's been on Maine Calling many times. Holly Williams is the head of circulation at the Bangor Public Library, and Laura Hale, the owner of Neighborhood Books in Presque Isle. Share your favorite read of the past year. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Talar Mazzeo, who is the author of The Sea Captain's Wife. She's the author of several award-winning biographies and works of cultural history. Talar, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the invite to be here.
So the book, The Sea Captain's Wife, is it a true story?
It is. It's nonfiction. Absolutely.
Wow. Well, give us a little bit of a synopsis. What's it about and why did you decide to write it?
So I'm from Maine. My family is from the Mid-Coast. I grew up in Rockport. And this is a story about a Rockland sea captain in the 1850s named Joshua Patton. And his wife, who is a very young woman, she's 19 at the time the story takes place, and she's from Boston. And they are in love, and they want to build a farm down on the West Gig River over by Owl's Head. And in order to do that, because he's a sea captain, they have to complete a certain number of circumnavigations to save up the money to retire. And the first circumnavigation, everything goes great, and they're on track. But on the second, everything goes wrong, just as they're entering what is the most dangerous waters in the world, which is Drake's Passage between the southern tip of South America and Antarctica. And it's the story of how Marianne Patton tries to save her husband and tries to save her family and does manage to save the ship. It's my joke about it is it's the perfect storm, the 1850s edition.
Wow. Well, it sounds terrific. And I really appreciate you calling in. And congratulations and good luck. Talar Mazzeo is an award-winning author whose new book is The Sea Captain's Wife. Let's see here. We will go to Ann Lynn, who's calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Ann Lynn. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. So I have two books, so I'll make it quick. The first one is called The Smiler with the Knife. It's by C. Day Lewis. Writing is Nicholas Blake. It's from 1939. It's about a plot to establish a dictatorship in England. And it's the coming together of a bunch of elites, you know, a charismatic businessman and a scientific innovator, and then populists across Britain who have a grievance about the changes, you know, and wanting to make England great again. The other one is called the Shahnameh, and it's the Persian Book of Kings. It's the Persian national epic, and I bring that up because in it, a king wants to destroy a city, and his advisor says, look, if you destroy it, people will blame you. What you have to do is appoint an ignorant, loudmouth governor, and you know, they will destroy it for you. So I think these themes coming together may not exactly be holiday fare, but I think they're certainly pertinent to our time.
Ann Lynn, thank you so much for your recommendation. So the first one, The Smiler with the Knife, but can you spell the second one?
Yes, it's Shahnameh, Shahnameh. It's the Book of Kings, like the Persian Shah. And it's translated by the English poet Dick Davis, or Davies. And it's really, if you want to understand Iranian culture and history, it is the book to read.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's see here. We'll move on. We'll go to Ed calling from Ogunquit. Hi, Ed. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you? Good to be here. My book, which was just recently published, is called The Collegium Conspiracy. And the early scenes in the book actually take place in Ogunquit and Perkins Cove. And it starts out with the it is a crime thriller. And it starts out as a with the murder of a U.S. congressman who is found dead at the Perkins Cove buoy. So it's got a little bit of a scary start on it, but the book evolves into a group of criminals called the Collegium, which is drawn from the old Roman term, and Yeah, and they are threatening to take over the global cryptocurrency market and undermine the U.S. dollar in the process. And one of the I've been in business for more than 40 years, and I've watched this cryptocurrency market evolved, and it worried the hell out of me. So as I began to develop this story, I began to realize that it's very possible that forces of greed and evil could manipulate an American institution like the monetary system and wreak havoc on the country.
Well, Ed, so thank you. Congratulations. And thanks for calling in. It's Ed Marino calling with the Collegium Conspiracy. Thank you so much for calling in. We're going to go now to Sarah Petrin. She is Sarah Dawn Petrin, the author of an audiobook, Bring Rain, Helping Humanity in Crisis. Sarah, thanks for calling in and tell us about your audiobook.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. The book is a memoir about 20 years of service in global humanitarian emergencies based on my experience in more than 20 countries experiencing war and disaster.
Oh, wow. And so why did you decide to create an audiobook as opposed to a book on paper?
Well, the book on paper came out in 2021 during the COVID pandemic. And when that book came out, so many people asked me to create the audiobook version so that they could listen on the way to work or school or while they're traveling. And it took me about 5 years to finish the recording at Portland Media Center. But it just wrapped up and came on Audible this week.
Oh, well, exciting. Congratulations. So that is Sarah Dawn Petrin. Her audiobook is called Bring Rain, Helping Humanity in Crisis. It is interesting how Sarah said people are asking for audiobooks. I know that our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, does a lot of driving and listens to a lot of books. Laura at the library, Holly at the library, do you find audiobooks continue to be popular, or are people using their own devices to get them?
And they're very popular. Our digital audiobooks in particular are more popular than CDs are now. I mean, we have an app that most libraries in the state use called Cloud Library. And they are exceeding ebooks now. So they're extremely popular.
Interesting. Let's see here. We'll go to Torbert calling from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. I'm going to keep to the theme that many seem to have taken. After 50 years of fighting fascism, I have two texts that are indispensable. One was published in 1950 by James Stuart Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N. It's called All Honorable Men, about collaboration amongst Nazi American and British industrialists during the war. And it's available on allhonorablemen.org. The second one is Pegasus, which is the story of the software that Israel developed and allows the holder of the software to take over any phone completely without the owner knowing. It's by Laurent Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, and Sandrine Rigaud, R-I-G-A-U-D.
Torbert, thank you for your recommendations. I appreciate it. We're going to go to a couple emails here, and I suspect these fall into the genre that we mentioned at the top of the show, but you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. An email from Todd who says, I'd like to suggest the book Galactic Hellcats and its sequel Andre and the Hellcats by Marie Vibert. No, I'm getting perplexed looks. Thank you, Todd. An email from F. My wife just finished writing her second romantasy trilogy, Guardians of the Fey Gate. The final book just published, and it is called Blood of My Blood. It's a really intense series leaning towards dark fantasy and tackles themes of colonialism, generational trauma, and resilience based off Irish mythology. So I'm curious about this, since I've just learned during this hour about romantasy. Are these books often based on some sort of mythology? Laura?
They can be, but I think that really anything goes in that genre. I personally haven't read it. I love mystery thrillers, but there are definitely some mythology books in that genre.
Okay, an email from Beth. How to Read a Book by Monica Wood is the first book that popped in my head when you asked for something we read recently. Of course, Mainers have likely read many of her books as I have, but don't overlook this one. And it's short. It so fits the emerging theme of your show today. Holly, I saw you nodding. How to Read a Book.
Yes, that was very good, and that's been very popular here too. Anything by that Monica writes actually is very popular.
All right, let's see. We will go to Rick calling from Falmouth. Hi, Rick, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I wanted to let people know about my graphic novel memoir, Drafted. It's the story of a young boy from Georgia that gets drafted into the army at the height of the war in Vietnam in 1966. After having a long career in comics, working mostly for Marvel, where I was primarily known as the artist of Beavis and Butthead comic book, when I was 70, the phone stopped ringing, and I didn't know what I was going to do with myself. It didn't seem like anybody wanted to hire me to work for them anymore. So I just, with this experience, I just sat down and I decided I'm going to talk about my own life or tell a story about my own life. And when I was a young man, I got drafted, and I remember thinking at the time, this is unbelievable. I got to tell somebody about this one day. I'm going to write a book about it, even though I didn't think of myself as a writer. And I didn't know it was going to take 50 years and it would be a graphic novel. But it really bugs the crap out of me that the publisher, who's a great publisher, Abrams Comic Arts, did a beautiful job on this book. It's a hardcover book with a dust jacket. It's a full color, and they printed 12,000 copies. So far, it's only sold 5,000 copies. So there's 7,000 copies in 664 cardboard boxes on metal shelves in a warehouse in Indiana. And I spent 5 years on this book, which was 3 years longer than 2 years longer than it actually taught me to serve.
Rick, will you
So I'm on a one-man.
repeat that? I suspect a lot of authors would be thrilled with 5,000 in sales, but why don't you repeat the name of the book for us?
Sure, it's called Drafted. And
Okay, great.
it's published by Abrams Comic Arts. It's available wherever books are sold, and the library can get it for you. I just want people to read it. I've given up a long time ago on ever making any money off my work. But I do want people to read the book because it's not just my story, but it's a story of what a whole lot of guys went through, of my generation.
Yeah.
And,
Well, Rick, I see our librarian taking notes. So there you go. You got one more library taking note of the book. We're going to go to Brian calling from Brunswick. Hi, Brian, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I finished a book this year called Choosing Sides: One Family's Revolutionary War Tale. It's a creative nonfiction about my first ancestor in the colonies, who was a minister at Trinity Church in New York. And it's told through the eyes of his 16-year-old son, specifically to focus on middle to high school audiences. It is a history that he went through. Both he and his father are buried in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And the book has a call that we should be teaching more civics, K through 12, in our schools, and that we should have obligatory national service at some time between, say, 18 and 24 years old. Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, Armed Services, so that we really have an appreciation for our nation and our Constitution.
Brian, well, you have just said something that Kenneth Davis couldn't agree with more, civics in the school. But Kenneth, I wanted to ask you about, Brian says his book, Choosing Sides, is about the Revolutionary War. Of course, many of us have just watched Ken B Burns' remarkable series about that period in our country's history. And of course, we're coming up on the country's semi-quincentennial. I always have to stop and think when I say that word. Kenneth, what Revolutionary War book would you recommend? I'm putting you on the spot, I know, but does one pop into your head?
Well, I just because it was on my short list to include for this show, and it's certainly probably not an overlooked book, but Walter Isaacson, the wonderful biographer, has a new book called, I believe the title is The Most Beautiful Sentence Ever Written. It is about the second sentence in the Declaration of Independence. And it's certainly a timely book in that respect, on this theme of history in a broader sense. And certainly the question of civics is one I've been involved with for a long time, talking with social studies teachers around the country about the importance of this. The fact is that we are at risk, and we're talking about books here, about books and the history of this country being erased and scrubbed in places like public and school libraries, in national parks, in our service academies. And so this is if we want to talk about the importance of books in our lives right now, it is a moment that is fraught with dangers if we are talking about removing books from libraries and not teaching the full history of this country. Obviously, I wrote a book called In the Shadow of Liberty about the relationship between four presidents and five enslaved people. This is part of our history, and we need to talk about it, which I'll use that as a segue to one of my other choices for the year. It's a book called The Zorg, a tale of greed and murder that inspired the abolition of slavery. It is a riveting book. It is history, but it is not dry academic history. The author has humanized this story. It's primarily about slavery in England as opposed to the United States, but it's completely, of course, related. So I will really put that on the top of my list of history books I've read this year that really deserve to get more attention and also really underscore the role, and I know people don't like to talk about this these days, the role that slavery played in the foundation of this republic. And it's an important subject that should not be cleansed from the public space.
And I looked it up. The book is called, the Walter Isaacson book, The Greatest Sentence Ever Written. The Greatest Sentence Ever Written. And of course, he is talking about the sentence, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." We do need to take another quick break. We want to hear from you. What are your recommendations? 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's program is all about good books. My guest, Laura Hale with Neighborhood Books in Presque Isle, Holly Williams with the Bangor Public Library, and author Kenneth C. Davis. His latest book, The World in Books, A Year of Reading Wisely, that came out in paperback in October. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email quickly to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. We haven't talked much, Laura, about children's books yet. What could you recommend in that genre?
Well, I think I would recommend two books that my kids have really loved this year. The first one would be one that my daughter loved. She's 12, and it's called Olivetti. It is a short novel about a typewriter, and the typewriter's name is Olivetti. And I see Holly smiling. I hope she's familiar with this one. The typewriter breaks the one rule of typewriter code, which is not to communicate with the humans. And my daughter just really loved this book. She said this was her number one of the whole year. And my son is 10. He has not enjoyed reading, which has been hard for me. But this year, we're finally making a difference with him. And he loves sports. He loves soccer. So his favorite book this year is called The Academy by T.Z. Layton. And this is a book about a little boy who loves to play soccer. And I believe it was written by a man who, I think he played professional soccer. And so I know that the book is just full of all the soccer things. And my husband and my son have been reading it together at nighttime. And it has really made my son love reading this year. And that has been just everything for me. So those are my two kids' recommendations for the year.
Wonderful. Let's turn to poetry. And Kenneth, I know you have a recommendation here.
I do. I'm not a big poetry reader, but I read a wonderful book and certainly would fall into the category of overlooked, I think. It's called No Obvious Distress. It's by Amanda Quaid. She is a young actress and teaches acting and dialogue at the Yale School of Drama. And yes, she is from a famous acting family, the Quades. Her collection of verse, it's very slim, No Obvious Distress, is about her receiving a diagnosis of a very rare and unusual cancer. And part of the wonderful aspect of her poetry is she took some of her medical reports and redacted words from it to make poems. So it's quite interesting. The first one is the first page of the book. I'll read it. It's very quick. It says, Ms. Quade is full of demons. She has a giant in her. These are just the words of a medical report redacted to form that poem. And the rest then goes into poems about her experience as a young mother with a small child, learning about this dreadful diagnosis. So it's a most affecting collection of verse as a memoir. So I sort of highly recommend it.
Wonderful. And we have an email from the poet Isabel Neal. She's a poet who was on Maine Calling earlier this year and won a very prestigious prize, the Yale Series of Younger Poets Prize in 2025. She writes, I have a Maine poetry book update for Maine Calling. I wanted to share that listeners can pre-order my Yale Younger Prize-winning book, Throne Voice, starting December 11th. And there's a discount code at Yale Books, the code THRONE. THROWN, not like what the king sits on, but THROWN, the ball was thrown, gets 15% off. The book will be shipped in March. So congratulations, Isabel, and thank you for that. We'll go to Claire calling from Orono. Hi, Claire, go ahead.
Hi. Oh, I'm so happy to have got through to you. I was just typing out an email. I have two books that I would love you and your listeners to know. I think a lot of people do, but they're both quite recent. I am a retired organic inspector. I've inspected organic farms in Maine for years, and I've written two mysteries based on those, on my work in the maple woods and the blueberry fields. And I explain I wanted to create thoughtful and authentic portraits of life in those two remote and little-known bits of Maine. And so I decided that the way to do that is to make it fun to read, is to make them little murder mysteries. And that's what I did. And I have two books, and they're called Murder in the Maple Woods and The Body in the Blueberry Barrens. And, yes.
Claire, remind us what your last name is.
That's my pitch. Aykroyd. I'm Claire Aykroyd, A-C-K-R-O-Y-D.
Yeah, Holly Williams, you're familiar with one of her books.
I am. And Claire, I met you a long time ago, but Claire, your second book, and I think it's Body in the Blueberry Barrens. That was actually one of our staff's recommendations for this year.
Oh, that's so cool. Yes, Holly, I do absolutely know you because you've been very great. And so how cool that somebody found my book and liked it.
Well, you're not the Holly's not the only one. Laura, go ahead.
Oh, I said I knew it was Claire as soon as she started talking. We have both of her books in our store.
Oh, that's wonderful. They're available in most of, I think, all of the independent bookstores. And I'm getting great feedback from people who, you know, who find the portrait of life in interesting bits of Maine to be very nice to read about. And I think, you know, the dead body and the solution of the murders goes down quite well as well. So I'm so happy to know that bookstores have recognized my books. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. We have a bunch of emails I want to read here as quickly as possible because I'm looking at the clock. We have here, I think your listeners should hear about a new book by Maine author Gillian French. Shaw Connolly Lives to Tell. I do see you nodding your head with a smile, Holly. It is her first written for an adult audience. Shaw is a fingerprint analyst in rural Maine, still haunted by the disappearance of her sister 16 years ago, to the point of losing her marriage and alienating everyone around her. There's a persistent stalker calling her, claiming to have abducted and killed her sister, suspicious deaths, forensic puzzles, her dangerous obsession with finding the truth, a fine read. Well, thank you for that recommendation. Angel has sent an email that says, Neighborhood Books is my favorite bookstore. There you go, Laura. One of my top reads of 2025 is Broken Country by Claire Leslie Hall. I have also loved all of the romance books by Elsie Silver, especially the Wild Love series. And Pamela on Facebook writes, I love Richard Powers Playground. You'll never think about trash in this throwaway plastic-driven world the same again. I loved his award-winning book, The Overstory, too. He has a grasp on world issues that will plant a seed in every reader about how we manage natural resources. So there are just three of the emails coming in. We'll go to a quick call here. We'll go to Scott from Lisbon Falls. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yes, as I've gotten old, I've become politically active. There are two books I would strongly recommend. The book from the former Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, A Different Kind of Power, where she was almost a reluctant prime minister. And then there was a book called Another World is Possible that gives options that have been successfully implemented around the world. It's written by Natasha Zapata. And I know that I spoke to Gary Lawson at Gulf of Maine Bookstore, and he has gotten that book into the store, so I know he's had copies there at least. So both of those are tremendous. They give a sense of optimism in this political climate we live in.
Scott, thank you. Kenneth C. Davis, you have another nonfiction book to recommend.
One more, continuing the Italian theme. The Innocents, that's plural, of Florence, The Renaissance Discovery of Childhood by Joseph Luzzi, L-U-Z-Z-I. He's a wonderful writer who's written about Dante and his life and memoirs. This is about one of my favorite places in Florence, which is known as the Hospital of the Innocents. And it is the first foundling hospital in Europe, certainly, founded in the 1400s. And it was designed by Brunelleschi, who's famous for designing the Florence Dome. And it's called one of the first buildings of the Renaissance. And it reflects the Renaissance and the humanist spirit that many, many children were born illegitimate, out of wedlock, born to servants or slaves in Florence in this Renaissance period. So it's a piece of the hidden history of this time, and that these children would be brought to the hospital, deposited on a wheel so that it'd be anonymous. You put the child on the wheel and turned it around, but they always came with some kind of token or a ribbon or something that would be broken in half so that the parent or the mother could somehow return for them. It's a compelling book about a fascinating place and a piece of the history of the Renaissance that we, most of us, have never heard. The Innocents.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We have about 1 minute left. I'm going to see how many people, or 2 minutes, how many of these recommendations I can get to. Go to Valerie in Hancock. Hi, Valerie. Go ahead.
Hi. I listened to a lot of audiobooks when I commuted to Bangor as a VA nurse. And the one that I fell in love with was The Secret Life of Bees by Sue Monk Kidd. And one of the things I loved about it was the narrator, Jenna Lamia, because I often found that books could be very good, but if you didn't like the voice of the person reading it, it ruined it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that recommendation. I know a lot of people love the book, but you also love the audiobook, The Secret Life of Bees. We'll go to Kim on Westport Island. Hi, Kim. Go ahead.
Oh, hello there. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to get out R. Deanna Hamlin's Pink Chimneys as a fabulous, geographically correct, but fictional character set in the late 1800s in Bangor, Maine. A young daughter of a doctor who wanted to be a doctor but couldn't, so she became a midwife in it. It follows, there's actually a 3-book series. Pink Chimneys is number one. It's fabulous.
Wonderful. Thank you for that recommendation. Let's see. I'll go to Christina from Spruce Head. Hi, Christina. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to recommend Flight by Lynn Steger-Strong. It was published about 4 years ago, and it's very much perfect for this time of year. It's about a family in crisis in around Christmas time.
And you said it's Flight, right? Not Light. Flight. By Lynn Seeger-Strong. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Let's see here. We'll go to John calling from Augusta. John, can you do it in 10 seconds?
It's called Monopoly X. It's how the makers of the game Monopoly helped POWs escape from World War II prison camps.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. Monopoly X. Well, I apologize to everyone we have not been able to get to. Obviously, Main Calling listeners are also avid readers. And thank you to our guests, Laura Hale, owner of Neighborhood Books in Presque Isle, Holly Williams, head of circulation at Bangor Public Library, and of course, Kenneth C. Davis is a best-selling author and historian. Today's sound engineer, Jane Donahue. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, another busy one, a roundup of holiday events happening around Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.